Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
I'm on the cage. Every foul wicked spirit in the host, the ooze.
20 minutes, Dead to Relevé, on the ooze. Red out.
On the ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. This is Dark Fool, and with me on the line right now, I'm about to pick up, is my co-host Zach. Zach, how you doing today, man?
Good. How you doing, Matt?
Good. And I want to apologize for two things. First of all, I just opened the chat session a little bit late with all the craziness of getting this set up. I forgot to open up the chat room, so it's now open. And okay. Also, on the last show, I gave a calling number, which actually was the calling number because I post calling number to log into the show. The correct calling number is 347-989-1371. But anyways, you know, getting all that out of the way. How you doing, Zach?
Good, man. Good. It's a little early for me. You know, I usually don't do the Saturday show for this reason, but
we appreciate you. We appreciate the sacrifice, man, and getting up. Totally appreciate
all right.
it.
Cool. So what's our topic
today? So anyway, our topic today is relationships in the left-hand path. Now, I kind of geared it in the description towards, like, romantic relationships, but it could be any relationship. How does the left-hand path and Satanism and what have you that we're on, how does that affect relationships, you know, and relationship dynamics? How does that, you know, pros and cons?
Ah, I see. Interesting topic.
So, Zach, I,
yes.
You know, since you're here, I wanted to ask you first. You probably have a little bit of experience in this. I know I do.
Sure. You know, I don't know, man. I've always, I've kind of been on a don't ask, don't tell policy, where it's, unless it comes up, I never mention that I'm a Satanist. I mean, it's, I have before, and it's usually gone one of two ways. Either gone good or bad, I guess is the easiest way to put it. You know, nowadays, I mean, as I've gotten older, I've just pretty much, you know, I as far as relationships on a romantical aspect, I generally, you know, I look for qualities, for compatibility, not only philosophically, but more so emotionally. And when it comes to philosophically, you know, it's, no one needs to know exactly what I believe. It's not necessarily important to me that they're on the exact same level, just so long as we're not on the opposite level.
Right. I hear you. And so you would say that the left-hand path kind of, yeah, like one of two ways. It's either been okay, like accepted, or just negative all around.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's like I've dated, the majority of people that I date are generally from an atheistic or agnostic standpoint. You know, I wouldn't necessarily call them left-hand path, and I certainly wouldn't call them Satanist. In fact, I've never dated a Satanist that wasn't a Satanist before I met them, so to speak, you know. So it was like, you know, it's like, if you got somebody who's just open-minded and out to live their lives, you know, for the here and now, that's pretty much as good as I generally get. I mean, it's not too important to me that they're specifically a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool identified Satanist. To me, that's not really important. What's important to me is that, you know, I'm compatible, we get along. And in order for that to happen, I mean, they can't be hardcore fundamental Christians, of course. So that's kind of how it's always worked out for me. I mean, I would hope in the future that would change, but so far, you know, my ripe age of 34. That's kind of how it's gone down.
Right, man. I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. In fact, I have similar experiences that almost mirror that. In my experience, the first ever long-term relationship girlfriend I was with was a Christian. And, you know, I wouldn't say fundamental, but very strong in her beliefs. And it was very interesting because I knew that I was going on the satanic path, but when I met her, she made it clear up front that she was Christian. And I just said, shrugged my shoulders, and I said, let's see where this goes. And ended up being a beautiful relationship. Well, okay. A good relationship, a good first starter for a year. And, you know, like, well, without getting into the reasons we broke up, but that path definitely was one of them. And, yeah, I mean, she got confrontation.
Yeah,
I love that about her. She would get confrontational, and she would, like, kind of try to challenge my beliefs and saying, well, you know, LaVey was a con man, and all he did was try to find, you know, a gray area between religion, you know, psychology, and he was just taking advantage of people's weaknesses. And I said, well, what about, you know, of course I would come back with, well, what about the church? And, of course, in a relationship, that kind of relates into arguments. And, of course, if they're, you know, sometimes if they get pissed off over one area, they'll just kind of transfer it into another area, you know. So it kind of fell over like a stack of dominoes, you know what I mean?
You know, it does have that, it does kind of happen like that sometimes. And that's kind of why I'm just like, you know, if somebody, you know, pins me down and is real intent on knowing exactly what my philosophical beliefs are, I'll tell them. But other than that, you know what, it's just, if I'm compatible with somebody on an emotional level, I just don't see any need personally to trump the S card, so to speak. You know, it's just like, yeah, because there's too much baggage and too much there's too much shit that goes along with that that's not, you know, necessarily conducive to a healthy relationship. I mean, you know, I mean, I've had good relationships with people that are right-hand path. And, you know, it was, but they were right-hand path just to a certain extent, like in their mind, not necessarily in the daily practices. And it worked out good. It worked out good, you know. And, well, I can say it worked out good because I'm single, but it worked out good for the time being.
Right. And, you know, this really boils down to, I think, a deeper issue. You know, when we take on the left-hand path, when we take on Satanism, how far deep into our, I don't know, our being, our egos, whatever you want to call it, how deep does it go and how does it affect everything else around us? Or do we, to borrow other Satanist term, do we affect life by being a Satanist? Or is it something like somewhere in between?
Not sure about that, man. You know, I don't know, man. I don't know about you, man, but a lot of girls that I date, when I do tell them that I'm a Satanist or whatever, when I do approach that, a lot of them have an interest. But I don't think it's really an interest in Satanism or left-hand path. I think it's an interest in me and a need or a wanting to impress me or secure the relationship or just to play the part, you know. But at the end, it always falls apart, and, you know, people go back to what they're familiar with, what they're comfortable with.
That is very true, man. That is very true. In fact, I've known quite a few relationships outside of Satanism, outside of left-hand path, that have fallen apart due to fundamental differences. One person in particular I think of right off the top of my head was a radical form of Judaism, you know, accepting the old ways of Jewish beliefs and accepting the ways of Jesus Christ, so kind of meshing Old Testament and New Testament in its strictest form. And he tried to marry, have this relationship with a fundamental Hasidic Jew, I believe, and it didn't work out because she just went back to what she was comfortable with.
Yeah. Yeah, people have those security blankets.
Exactly. Now, you know, it's interesting, on the flip side of that, there are a few exceptions to the rule. Without naming anybody, I don't want to, you know, drag people out in their personal relationships and their personal lives, but some mutual acquaintances we know are married, are actually married to Christians being Satanists, and it's very interesting how that works, you know? I mean, obviously, a major exception to what we're talking about, seeing as how in different cases, being on the left-hand path has kind of failed in certain areas within relationships, but in other people, it kind of, like, it's interesting to see how that dynamic will work, but, you know, how it, at the same time, it's very much a 50-50 chance, I guess,
well,
is what
know,
I'm trying
I,
to get at.
Yeah, I do. I do. And, you know, I don't, I have to say, like, you know, that I think the heart wants what the heart wants, and people are compatible on an emotional level. I think that trumps their philosophical differences, and they can either turn a blind eye or ignore or just come to accept that someone else believes differently philosophically or religiously than they do.
Absolutely, man. And again, I want to throw out the call-out number. It's 347-989-1371 for anybody who wants to call in. From what I'm seeing in the chat room, Zach, by the way, it's saying that there might be some sort of a loose connection. I'm not sure if that's on my end, but are you on? You're on your cell phone, correct?
Right, right, right. I might be able to get in the chat room if I bring the computer outside
okay.
and see what's going on here.
Okay, I myself am on a cell phone, so I don't. None of us are Skyping in. I don't see what the connection problem is. But anyway, yeah, on with the show, I guess. Personally, like, I don't know. I mean, that's why I kind of take the approach of being a Satanist and just putting out there, or, you know, being on the left-hand path, or at least somewhat associated with the left-hand path. And I just throw it out there just to see, you know, what will happen. And I have enough confidence. You know, if another woman, if the right woman comes by, she won't care.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. You know, if the sparks fly and the connection's there, I think the philosophical indiscrepancies are kind of secondary to the emotional ones. And I think I truly believe you can have a fulfilling relationship with somebody who's not, you know, between left-hand path and right-hand path. If the person who's right-hand path is tolerant or, you know, not too structured in their rigidity, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm looking at the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the chat room, Matt, and I don't even see the chat room open. Is it open?
It's open. I'm seeing Corazon is there. Bobo Bat.
Okay.
How you guys doing? Welcome.
Yeah, I encourage you guys to call in here. Okay. Oh, my problem was I wasn't signed in. All right.
You know, it's another. Oh, yeah. That might be a problem. Another issue is, this was particularly when I was younger within, you know, just starting out on the left-hand path and getting in that relationship, like I said, there were huge moral differences. I mean, it took a long time for me to get this girl to, well, I'd say not just open up, but open up in other areas, if you get what I mean. I mean, the morality is kind of, you know, sex before marriage and all that stuff, that played a huge role in some earlier fights that we got into. But, you know, that another issue, another aspect to look at is the moral side of things and the codes of life and how, obviously, you know, there's less structure in that area for people on the left-hand path and more, you know, rigid for people on the right.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, you know, Dark Fool, I hate to tell you this, man, but I got to go, man. Hopefully we can get some callers to call in. Bobo? I see Bobo's here, right? She's still here.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get going here, man. But Bobo, please call in if you can. Love to hear from you. Love to hear from your experiences and your relationships.
Okay. Well, you know, thank you for joining us today, Zach. We'll look at the dial out.
All right.
Dial
sorry,
out
guys.
Get people's personal lives.
Yeah. I got to go. I got to give a report.
All righty, then. You take care, man.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Again, that call-in number is 347-1371. And I guess this is now, I guess I should also start making gardening videos if I'm just going to be talking to myself. So, all right. I will interact with the chat room then. So, both have an interesting brought up on other shows about being and being a Christian Satanist, so to speak. A very interesting combination. I encourage you to call in. That would be great. Don. Anyone. Hello?
Hello, I'm sorry. My connection was messed up. How are you?
No worries. How you doing, Bobo?
I'm good.
So?
Yeah.
Anything anything you care to add? Any contributions? Because I know you've had an interesting dynamic in this, so I would love to hear your thoughts.
My husband basically asked me to choose between him and Satanism.
Ouch.
Yeah, I chose Satanism.
So, okay, now what made you choose that? Why Satanism and not the flesh,
well,
so to speak?
I told him that he wasn't asking me to choose between him and the philosophy. He was asking me to choose between him and me. You know, he's had some trouble with the paradigm shifts and some of the personality changes that have occurred, the sudden want to go do my own thing and stuff.
Understood. I mean, I see it not so much making excuses for anybody, but I see where he would take issue with that. But at the same time, you know, like, well, there's obviously for somebody to put that kind of ultimatum on their life partner, I think that's very unfair. I mean, yeah, that's definitely right. They're choosing between, you have to choose between you and him and be subservient to him. And I actually applaud your decision to stand up for yourself.
Yeah, that's part of where I've been in the past few weeks. Because it just kind of like pulled the rug out from underneath my life, yeah.
This was recent, huh?
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, my goodness. My condolences,
mm-hmm.
then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is a... Yeah, I actually stole our van when he told me and went to my grandmother's house for 2 weeks. And then came back.
Well,
yeah.
Well, really, really quickly, I would just like to announce we have another call on the line. I see you there. I will accept. I'll bring you on the air. But first, I want to get a little bit of Bobo's story out. So, I mean, tell me what was going through your mind. How did you feel? I mean, what was the process like? I mean, if you. You know, without going too much into detail, whatever makes you uncomfortable,
well,
don't, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you guys know I'm pretty much an open book.
absolutely.
Well, you know, when I started, I was still not a Satanist when I started on Sin. And I've been, you know, getting more and more and more into it. I was curious, which is why I joined, and I wound up finding out this is my thing. And he's a Kabbalist, so to him, I he comes from a Ptolemaic slant. I chose to be a black brother. I chose to be evil. It just was a complete, we come from two different paradigms, and it just got to the point where he couldn't accept it anymore.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say evil, I mean,
yeah.
Evil dependent on what? It, obviously, from his perspective, I assume. I mean, what is it that he saw that was so evil in you that he just said, well, you have to choose now and put the put the foot down?
He said that I was our marriage has always been set very traditionally, and that started changing really quick. I started going, no, I think I want to get a job. No, I think I want to do this. No, I think I want to do that. And eventually it was just too much for him, you know. And it's like I said before, he married one person, and I'm now a different person. But, I mean, we've been together 8 years, which is understandable.
Well, I think tragic is the word that comes to mind, and my condolences. But, the part of marriage is, marriage is one of those things. I think we lost a lot of that in our culture. And I'm not talking about the religious, dogmatic, Christian, aspects of that. I mean more societal. Marriage is one of those things where you have to know. It's not like a shotgun wedding in Vegas, you know. It's one of those things where you have to know who you're married to. And if there's anything else that comes along, you have to be ready to accept that and to move forward because you've decided to make a decision to spend the rest of your life with someone. And it's no longer your life. It's your lives, plural.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And that's, I did a lot of compromising, and then eventually it just got to the point where it was like, basically you want me to not do it at all. Because at first it was just like, could you not read that in front of me? Could you not talk about that? Could you not, do you see what I'm saying? And it just got to where it was more and more and more. I'm hoping, though, maybe he was just pissed and it'll work out, you know? So,
right.
Yeah.
Now, I actually had the same experience. I mentioned before that I dated a Christian. It was my first ever main relationship. How should I say? First ever long-term relationship with someone, and that lasted about a year. I had a relationship after that that lasted 3 years, but knew the girl a total of 8. And what's funny about that is she was pagan, and I was satanic. And she didn't, it's same exact thing. I mean, you know, history that repeats itself, you know. Didn't accept that. She wasn't exactly white, light, fluffy, but at the same time, she kind of was. It was kind of weird because, I would see aspects that were dark and then, that you know, she kind of cowered and things. So I was like, okay, whatever. But that's the thing. I said, whatever, you know. I was totally accepting of it, but. You know, slowly but surely, I didn't even realize she was doing this to me, but I was starting to leave Satanism in order to be with her. It was kind of like similar to what Zena Satanis had gone through, which she shared on the news a couple episodes back. I found myself changing myself for another person, and I came to the same conclusion. I said, no, I got to do this. I got to be me. And, of course, that relationship ended.
Yeah.
I think
it
boils down to is compromising. I mean, there is a certain amount of compromise in a relationship, but
mm-hmm.
you cannot compromise what's in your core. And that's kind of where the show is going, is like how much to the core does Satanism or what you choose to be really go down? I
mm-hmm.
mean, is it surface level? How deep can it go?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing for me is that as I've discovered it, I've changed. I mean, it's like I was telling y'all on my highlight edition, it's like I'm a totally different person than I was 6 months ago, you know? And I don't know if that's a con thing or if it's just going to be, you know, I'm hoping that eventually it'll kind of settle out, you know? But I haven't been doing this long, so.
Right. You're fairly new to the left-hand path, and understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to see where this takes you.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we still have caller on the line, 757 area code.
It's Sin. How you guys doing?
Good.
Hi.
How
you doing?
Good. I thought it was an interesting topic, and then having listened to Bobo's story, I think just relationships in general are very difficult. I prefer unconventional types of relationships versus the traditional. And they've worked for me, but I'm surrounded by people who are in conventional relationships, such as marriages. And I see that sort of thing happen. It doesn't really matter what these people believe in or practice. People change over time. I think the roles of each partner changes with time. Like, you know, after an eight-year marriage, even if Bobo didn't, you know, subscribe to the left-hand path, she may have gone through some sort of evolution of, on her own, you know, where she's saying, no, you know, I want more for myself. I'm constantly sacrificing what I want so that you can be happy, but I want to be happy too. And then, you know, people in general, when they seize those opportunities to, you know, gain more, you know, sovereignty in a relationship, the other person doesn't always react well. So I think that's the case across the board for the most part, based on my observations at least.
Oh, no, I agree. I think that's why people get divorced so quickly now, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Is that you change. Everybody changes over time, regardless of what path you subscribe to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what it is. What it boils down to is, like, one person might remain the same. You know, it's almost kind of like they stagnate, but they're happy that way. You know, if they're happy mm-hmm. that way and they want to stay that way, that's them. But the other person may not be, you know, content to stagnate, and so they change and evolve and they explore different thoughts and things, and the other person, like, freaks out when the other person is making such dramatic changes in their lives. It's like, whoa, wait a minute, you're not the same person I married 8 years ago. What's going on here? But I think, you know, with a marriage, you would think there would be some kind of level of understanding and communication between two partners to say, okay, you're going through all these changes. Why am I not okay with that? I don't think people self-reflect enough. I think they're too busy looking at other people to look at themselves.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree. And, you know, with my husband, I mean, he's a nice guy. It's not like he's an awful person. He just, you know, and that's the thing, is that it was relatively amicable, because I said, I'm choosing me. And then he just said, I can't accept that. I was like, okay, well, you know, that's it then, you know.
Yeah, there's just some things you're just not willing to compromise. I mean, that's really what it boils down to, that your freedom to, you know, choose different ways to live your life should be your freedom, and you're not willing to give up that freedom just so, you know, you can kind of be happy in your marriage. I mean, content in your marriage, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Exactly. And like I said before, there are compromises within relationships and compromises within marriage, but how much of that, you know, when you start affecting who you are as a person, start becoming the person that they want you to be, then that's a completely one-sided, dysfunctional relationship. And, you know, what should be a beautiful relationship as marriage turns into slavery. You know what I mean? I understand,
yeah, I agree.
Though, I mean, what about the dynamics when you bring kids into it? I mean, at Bobo, at one time, wasn't there a time when you thought, I mean, I know you hear that line all the time, think about the children, but, you know, where does that fall into place when you have, you know, relationship issues of what I believe, what he believes? I mean, how much of a role does that play?
Well, with me and my husband, we don't, I don't really approach religion with my kids. I kind of want them to make their own choices. So I haven't really given them anything really there. I want them to, you know, I don't care what they decide to do. I think that, you know, I really do think that all religions are kind of trying to achieve the same end. It's kind of like what your flavor is that you prefer, you know. So I want them to do that. So I try to just let them do, you know, whatever they want to. I mean, they go to church with their grandmother, except for my oldest son, who refuses to go. But, you know, he's kind of an odd kid, so.
Well, I guess what I'm really trying to get at is, you know, how much of yourself are you willing to compromise for the future generation? I mean, at the same time, how much of a good example does it show to your kids when you say, I'm going to be independent, I'm going to be strong, and I'm, you know, this is the way I believe, this is the way I feel, this is the way I see things, and nobody's going to change my mind except me. I mean, that's both sides. If you really look at it, both sides have admirable traits, you know, like sacrificing oneself for the good of their children, at the same time, not sacrificing too much of oneself in order to lead by example.
Well, I can inject a little bit. I'm a parent. Now, my ex-husband and I have two different parenting styles. I will agree about that. He's more coddling and overprotective, where I try to give my son the tools so that he can make decisions for himself. So if he's having some kind of issue in his life, we'll sit down and talk about it. And then I'll offer him my perspective on whatever the issue is, and then I'll ask him what he thinks about that. And we communicate that way. And then I introduce options and let him decide. Now, his father may approach it a different way and say, well, no, it should be this way, and this is how I was raised, and so this is how you should think. But because I'm equipping my child with thinking skills, he may internalize that. He may say what he needs to say to his father to make him happy at the moment. But later, he's going to think about what his father said. He's going to think about what I've said. But in the end, he's going to make his own decision. I mean, provided it's not something that's going to harm himself.
Right, right.
So I lead by example in that way and let him come into his own line of thinking. And I've watched him evolve as a child. You know, as a younger child, he was very animistic in his thoughts. You know, he thought everything had its own life essence, everything had a soul, everything, needed consideration. As times progressed, he went through a period where he was very hardline atheist. You know, there is no God, and there is no gods, and I don't need to think about any of that stuff. It's all stupid. And then now that he's in his mid-teens, you know, he's approaching 16 this summer, he told me recently that he's more agnostic, and that the way he views the world is that he's so small and the world is so big that he really can't take such a hard-line thought process on everything. He has to actually consider that he may not know everything there is out there to know, and it would be too presumptuous for him to take such a hard-line stance. And he approaches everything in his life that way. He sits back and he says, well, I'm small, the world is big, I need to think about it first. And sometimes I just don't know.
That's, wow. A lot of that. Hello?
Oh, I'm still here.
Okay, how old is your son?
He's 15. He'll be 16 this summer.
Okay, that's just about the right age when you're really starting to weigh things. I mean, especially being in high school and having a lot of things challenged and questions and all that.
Oh, yeah,
sort of.
He tells me about a lot of the conversations that he has with his friends, and, you know, they badger him about some of the things that he thinks about and believes, but, you know, he holds to his convictions, but some things he'll consider his friends' points of view and say, well, maybe he has a good point, and I'll have to think about that before I decide.
Excellent. Well, I mean, that's, and see, that's another good example of, like, you know, leading by example, showing them, you know, obviously, you know, when your kids grow up, they're going to be their own individual entities. I mean, there is a stage where they will copy and mimic what they see. So, but,
sure.
You know, that stage is temporary. I mean, you really have to think of the long term when you have relationships, when you have kids involved in those relationships, because, I mean, self-sacrifice can only go so far. In fact, we've mentioned this on previous shows about martyrdom. So, I mean, sacrifice, you really have to weigh in the pros and the cons, especially when it comes to the left-hand path and kind of being free and being your own individual person.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of things as a single parent that I sacrifice. You know, I would have an entirely different life if I were not a parent. But I still live my life on my terms, you know, because there's nobody to answer to. I have my internal conscience that tells me that there are certain things that I cannot do or I won't do simply because it would be a poor example to my child. And so there are certain sacrifices that I do make because I would prefer to do certain things, but in lieu of being a parent, I have to, you know, realize that I'm the example that he's gonna emulate, because as much as we try not to be like our parents, we still emulate them in some regard. Even when we're completely sovereign from them and we're adults and we're grown and we're often living our own lives, I'm sure we can all sit back and look and say, yep, I did that just like my mom would have. Or, yep, that was just my dad. You know, there's influences there that are basically encoded and imprinted into us.
Oh, yeah. And that goes back to what I said before about there is a part where we mimic what we see. And, you know, again, how far that goes down, we don't know.
but we will end up carrying on traits, not just of our, you know, not just genetic, but obviously, you know, like societal or, you know, immediate family traits, and we'll carry that into, you know, our own relationships.
Absolutely.
And really, what it boils, I mean, I haven't had kids yet, but just growing older, I've seen myself saying things that my dad would say, and I said, oh, my God, I promise I would never do that.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Especially as parents. When my son was smaller, like toddler age, I caught myself several times emulating my mother, and there were things that I detested about my mother when I was little, and I was like, and I had to check myself, and I was like, wow, talk about programming. But I, you know, at least I was aware enough to catch myself. I was like, boy, I did that just like my mother would have. I'm not doing that again. You know.
And speaking of programming, that's another good thing to think about. I mean, obviously, when you look at Right Hand Path religions, you see a lot of programming. There's a lot of dogmatic rituals, but within the Left Hand Path, there's not so much dogmatic rituals. So, you know, I always borrow the quote from Barboza in Pirates of the Caribbean. It's you know, the codes that we live by are more like guidelines, you know, but, I mean, there might be some people that take that to the extreme. I mean, you're going to have extremists in any religion, and I put that in quotes.
I encounter dogmatic Satanists all the time. I mean, I'm in awe of it, really. You know, there's very few Satanists that I would say, wow, well, he's got it right, he's doing his thing. You know, there's more that I identify that I'm like, wow, he doesn't even realize how strongly he's holding on to that dogma. He's not using it as guidelines. He's really, like, imprisoning himself with it.
Exactly. And see, people like that, you know, I often refer to people like that as Christians because they're so dogmatic in their beliefs, they're egocentric, they say this is how it is. You know, they just emulate the reverse side of the very thing that they claim to be against. And woe to them who have children.
I kind of view it a little differently that I wouldn't consider them to be Christians. I would consider that to be a human trait. And even when LaVey was codifying his philosophy, he included the dogma for those people who needed it because he identified that some people do need it. Now, if he hadn't outlined, you know, the statements of the earth and the deadly, you know, the satanic sins, you know, people would have probably have gone to him and say, well, what shouldn't we do? You know what I mean? We can't just do everything. You know, there's got to be some kind of guideline we should follow. So I think he included that for those people that do need it because it's a very human trait to want to adhere to some kind of framework. You know, they may paint the picture inside of it, but it's that without that framework, some people feel lost.
Absolutely. I mean, structure. I mean, that's one of the things that religion throughout the centuries has provided people was a sense of structure. You know, you see it in you even see it in the East in certain sects. You know, you see strict forms of Hinduism, strict forms of Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it really depends. I think it boils down to personality. You know, do you need something that resonates with you being a little bit more obsessive compulsive? Do you need something that resonates more with you know, being laid back? Do you need anything at all? You know,
I've caught myself doing that over the years. Like years ago, I was interested in what the Temple of Set had to offer in terms of, like, you know, what were they teaching, what was in their library. So I went ahead and joined, and it was this lengthy, retarded process. I was like, dude, I just want to get in your library, really. But once I got in there, it was just so chaotic. So, they have to sponsor you. It took me 8 months to get into this place. And I had this sponsor, and I went to him, and I was just like, look, I'm looking through, because they feed you just a little bit of information. They give you these tablets that you're supposed to study.
Right, the Ankh tablet, the crystal tablet,
right.
Ruby tablet, all that.
Right, but at the same time, they encourage you to visit their library, and their library literally has thousands of books.
Oh, I know.
And a lot of them are valuable. They really are valuable. But I went back to the sponsor, and I'm like, okay, so I'm studying the tablets. I'm reading all of Aquino's works. I'm rifling through the library. I'm on the forum. And I still have no idea what you people are talking about. Is there any kind of, like, curriculum or structure? And the guy came back and asked me. He's like, well, do you need structure? I'm like, I don't need structure in general, but I would just like some kind of, like, guideline of, you know, like some kind of timeline.
At least a Dewey Decimal System.
Right, you know, like some kind of timeline. Like if I studied this book am I ahead of the game? Should I be studying these 6 books first before I study this book? I mean, you guys are all over the place. And they considered that, and they actually ended up developing a curriculum for new initiates going in. And I was just like, well, thank God, you know, because I was all over the place. I couldn't really wrap my head around, you know, the bottom line. I really wanted the bottom line. Like, what makes a Sethian different than a Satanist? What is it exactly that sets you apart? I know there's a very big focus on a becoming, similar to, like, LaVey's becoming the Superman. But there wasn't, like, a lot of huge differences that I saw until I had the structure. And then once I had the structure, I'm like, oh, this is a theism. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. You know what's funny? You know what's funny is that is very much, the becoming is very much like a second growing up, bringing it back to the topic at hand, you know, in relationships and children and that sort of thing. I mean, the chaos is what allows us to grow, and the structure allows us to grow in a certain direction.
Right,
I mean,
and it's a programming. That structure was programming, and I didn't realize it until I was in the middle of the study, and I was just like, oh, okay, I prefer the chaos. Let me get out of here. Let me get back to the chaos and just let me grab and beg, borrow, and steal whatever I can before they kick me out of here, which they did eventually kick me out of there.
And I actually resonate completely with your story, because, like, when it came to the Kabbalah, even certain aspects of it, you know, there's a lot of stuff, like, esoterically and metaphysically that I didn't quite understand. I mean, I was taking notes upon notes upon notes. I have, like, 2 journals filled out.
Oh, you and me too, brother. I've studied it. You and me too. I ended up taking my own direction with the Kabbalah. I actually developed a satanic
Absolutely.
Kabbalah.
Right, and, you know, I've looked at other systems. I've looked at Michael W. Ford's, which is awesome. I've looked at Jason King's, which is awesome. I've looked at other left-hand path ideas of the Kabbalah, and, I've, you know, a lot of them are very interesting, and I myself plan to work in that area. I mean, because you can study something and know it intellectually, but until you actually, you know, experience it, you haven't truly grasped it. And so,
exactly.
I mean,
exactly, which is why I didn't actually truly experience it until I created my own shit. You know, once I had the map and I understood how the map could be utilized, then I was like, oh, okay, then I can just label these spheres however the hell I want to label them and then walk each path as I'm trying to complete a task. Easy.
Right, and look at that huge fundamental difference between coming into your own and studying it for yourself versus somebody else handing it to you. I mean, like, when it comes to relationships in particular, people want that comfort and security of having somebody else look after them and provide the structure,
right.
Whereas... it's a
right,
lot
which is
harder
why I prefer
for people
the unconventional to the conventional, because on the unconventional type of relationships, I'm pretty much setting it up from the beginning. Like, if I meet somebody that I'm jiving with and I want to spend more time with them, I pretty much have to be very upfront with them about what type of relationship I'm actually pursuing with them. That way they can make an informed decision on whether or not they want to engage in that type of relationship with me, to include being forthright about who I am. Like, who are you getting in cahoots with here? You should know that because, you know, 3 weeks down the road or a few months down the road, I want to pull out a surprise, you know, and then you react badly, and then I'm looking at you like you're the asshole when I'm the asshole because I misled you.
See, and this is a very important characteristic that's often overlooked within the left-hand path, is that people that are truly on the left-hand path have the audacity to question and search for things themselves, whereas people that are on, let's say, the right-hand path, you know, provide on a structure from somebody else, and the weight of thought is not on their shoulders. And
I think
that's,
the right-hand path implies, a passivity, whereas the left-hand path implies a you know, more aggressive approach to things.
Exactly, and questioning and, you know, getting you to think for yourself. And
mm-hmm.
A lot of people just want to go along with the program, just want to be led by sheep, even if they claim to be left-hand path and they're too rigid in their structure. I mean, you have to be willing to question these things. Otherwise, you know, and how that affects relationships around you. If you're a strong, bold one and somebody is afraid to follow, I mean, in one of my relationship that I had with my my ex was, I mean, I honestly started counting how many times she would say, I'm scared, and not do something in a relationship. And it's like, I was the one that was always boldly forging ahead. And it can't be one-sided like that.
Exactly. Yeah, and those are the types of relationships that never pan out in the end, and then you look back and be like, wow, was that really a waste of my time? Did I really get anything out of it? You know, could I have been doing something else with someone else, you know? That's the way
exactly.
I look at it, you know? You know, it just seems like a big waste of time. I mean, unless you've walked away with that from that relationship and having gained something, even if it was some kind of profound experience with another person. And I think that applies to all types of relationships, not just romantic ones, you know, even just friendships or coworkers or whatever, any kind of relationship you have with a person.
Right. And see, this is why I take the approach that I take. I mean, Zach and I take different approaches on this one. He prefers not to bring it up, and that's cool, you know, to each his own. The reason why I just lay it on the table like that is just, I've had that happen where it's like twice in my life where I've tried to, you know, say this is, you know, like let's try to make this work. At this point, I'm just like, this is the way I am. If you can't accept it, you know, bow now.
Yeah. Well, and that's why for me, I think it's beneficial to me if I'm very forthright with who I am and how I live my life. And it's not like I say, hi, nice to meet you. I'm Sin Jones and I'm a Satanist. You know, it's not like that. I slowly introduce who I am to a person, and I'm real about myself. I don't find myself having to, you know, sugarcoat my ideas so that they're easier to swallow or lie or mislead so that somebody doesn't think that I'm a certain way. You know, like when somebody says, oh, you're selfish, I'll be like, I'm absolutely selfish. Oh, well, you're a narcissist. I'm absolutely a narcissist. You know, I explain those types of things to them. And if their immediate response is to be, I don't like that, then you need to address that. Be like, well, going forward, this is kind of where I'm at, you know, and this part of me is not going to change. I'm not willing to compromise this part of me so that you can like me. Because that's what it really boils down to, is you want the person to still like you in spite of this idea you hold they don't like.
And then that brings up an issue of unrequited love. You know, it's like I'm going to keep loving something that doesn't love me back, and I'll change myself in order for that to happen. I mean, really, what you have to, especially for people in less empath, you have to love yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the rest will fall into place.
Absolutely, and that's part of loving yourself by, you know, being very forthright with who you are and not trying to, you know, mislead a person. Now, sometimes that does occur where the person just wants to be with that person by whatever measure. You know, they just want them. You know, so they will turn into whatever they need to turn into so that that person will want them back. I prefer not to live that way, but I see it all the time. You know, sometimes you're just attracted to somebody and you want them so bad and you're going to do whatever the hell you need to do to get them to want you back. You know, and if that works out for a little while and you get something out of it, all the power to you, but it usually doesn't, you know, doesn't pan out in the end.
Right, a marriage of convenience. And you know what, speaking of relationships, I know we've been talking about romantic relationships, but, you know, and I'm really opening up. I love this about Blog Talk Radio being the co-host and everything that, you know, I've just been opening up a lot more. Relationships-wise, it could be like that, not just with a spouse, but with family members, especially immediate family members who you're dependent on. I mean, how much of yourself are you willing to compromise before you say, you know what, enough of this shit. I'm just going to take to the streets. I don't care. I'll become tougher out there, but at least I'll love myself. You know, I myself have been.
I can speak from personal experience on that.
By all means.
I was emancipated as a teenager. Because, you know, the family I was in was pretty dysfunctional as far as families go anyway. But that dysfunction was causing me such hardship and misery that I simply could not take it anymore. So I was just like, you know what? Why do I have to be here? Yes, this is my family. They always say you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. Bullshit. So I went through the measures. I got emancipated. And I was on my own at 16. And
I've had friends who have made better family members than ones I've known all my life.
Absolutely. And sometimes when your family member is causing you more misery than it's worth, I mean, what are you actually fighting for? Are you fighting for the idea of family, or are you fighting to actually continue that relationship with that family member that's causing you grief? And if you've done everything that you possibly can and you have a good conscience about, you know, what you've done to try to maintain that relationship and it's still horrible, then just, you know, sometimes it's better to just cut it out like cancer and walk away. And my life has been so much better because of it. You know, you just got to keep some family members at a distance. I mean, to the point where I moved out of state to get away from them. You know, and my life has been so much better since because of that. Now, it doesn't mean they're not still in my life in some regard. They just don't have any control over my life. And that's one of the biggest things when you're a minor. I my heart goes out to so many teenagers because they don't have the power to be sovereign because they're a juvenile. And a lot of parents have no business with children. They seriously don't. They're abusive.
Yeah.
You know, they're manipulative.
Yes.
Absolutely.
On a side note, here I am saying, pre-calm, sister. You know, but on a personal level, again, that's one of the reasons why I didn't get my driver's license until I was 18 years old, because I knew when I was 16, they, mom and dad, would say, you know what, we don't like what you're doing, we don't like who you are, we're going to keep the keys, and I knew that was coming. To me, like, to quote Jack Sparrow, you know, it's not just a boat, it's freedom, love. and you know, that's the exact attitude long before that movie came out. That was the exact attitude I had towards the car. It's like, nope, I'm going to have my freedom. I'm going to go where I want to go. I'm going to do, you know, what I have to do. And, you know, with these people lording it over my head, you know, here are the keys dangling it in front of me like a freaking carrot. I said, fuck that. I'll put in the time and wait.
I hear you. Yeah, I had many a shit box that I had to buy for myself at that, you know, because, you know, when you're 16, you're working, you're going to school, and you still want, you know, you got to have a car.
Right.
Yeah, so I had to, so for me to have my freedom, I had to, you know, sacrifice the possibility of maybe getting a nicer car if my parents bought it for me, but having to settle for the shit box that I could afford. But I was proud to drive that shit box, let me tell you, because it was mine.
See, look at that. When it comes to relationships, too, also, you know, when you have things handed to you from, let's say you were in the lesser income in the relationship. Let's say you weren't able to stand on your own two feet and you needed to depend on it, whether it's parental, whether it's marriage, et cetera. How much more do you appreciate something when you've worked hard for it and earned it rather than having your spouse or your parents or other loved ones just give it to you? You know, there's a sense of pride that comes with that.
Yeah, and you almost take that for granted, too, because you're like, well, whatever, they bought it for me. It doesn't really have any value. But when you worked your ass off and put your blood, sweat, and tears into it to get it, man, that's the best thing you could ever bought. It doesn't matter what it is. You got it for yourself, and it's the bomb. Yep, I agree.
Awesome. Well, I wonder if there's any other portion of this show, any other portion of the relationships that we haven't touched on. I mean, we've touched on kids, we've touched on parents, we've touched on, you know, spouses, changing yourself in order to fit
co-workers.
A better mold for your husband. Oh, co-workers, here we go. And the workplace.
Now, my workplace is kind of funny. I started working at this place, and everybody was afraid of the boss, and I never understood this. I mean, he's an older Greek gentleman, you know, he's pretty burly kind of guy, but everybody in the office was intimidated by him. And when I got hired, I was told that there was probably four or five girls that had the job before me, but they couldn't hack it and quit or left or got fired. And so I started dealing with the boss, you know, and so I would just deal with the boss like I would deal with any person in my life, you know. If he got his panties in a twist, I would handle it. If he needed something, I provided it. I mean, I'm there to do a job. And I developed my own relationship with my boss to where everybody in the office was just like in awe of it. And I'm actually the employee that's actually worked there the longest, because I think he identified early on that I wasn't going to take a shit. And I think where they failed was that because he was the boss and because he had the ability to fire them or, you know, he had the power to give them a raise or whatever, he was someone to fear. And for me, it was almost like two alphas in the office, because I'm a very alpha personality. He's a very alpha personality. So, but it became a camaraderie versus he and I vying for the top dog in the office. And to this day, I mean, I've never had any reason to be intimidated by this man. Like, even when he was, you know, like, you know, I do accounting, so he was just like, you paid something twice, you fucked up, da-da-da-da-da, you know, he's giving me the riot act. And I'm like, you know what? You're right, I did, because I'm a human being, and all that shit that goes into that computer is human. It's
right.
Not automated, and I am not infallible. I made an error, I recognize it, and I will correct it. Okay, are we done here? And he was like, yep, that's it. He just needed to get that shit off his chest. He just needed to let me know that he was mad that he paid something twice. And I can't blame him. I wouldn't want to pay something twice. You know, and I recognize that I made a mistake. And, you know, I said, okay, I'll do my best to correct it. I apologize. You had to endure that because of my error, you know, and let's move on. And that was it.
You know,
really quickly,
I just wanted to say that we have 4 minutes left of the show. You know, I myself, I'm able to get away with certain things. I'm not, like, saying that, oh, I'm getting away with stuff on purpose, but some stuff I'm kind of allowed to because I'm, you know, at my job, I'm unioned. So I see people coming in there and, you know, a lot of people come in, coworkers come in with their rosaries and stuff. I come in bearing a universal hexagram, you know. I put it out there, even in the left-hand path in the workplace, I put it out there on the table. I kind of, like, hint at it, like, this is me, this is what I'm about, you know, and I don't push it too much in people's face. If somebody asks, I'll discuss, but I don't, you know, try to proselytize or anything like that. But it's one of those things where, I mean, I've seen people, like, almost shit themselves in fear of, they're like, oh, I might get fired and stuff like that. It's like, no, you are protected by the First Amendment in this country. This is one of the great things about this country is that you can actually go in there. But, you know, I mean, I've seen a lot of that too, where people are so afraid of the boss that they, you know, like, oh, I can't let them know. And of course, that carries into other aspects, like, let's say, Facebook, that sort of thing. Same deal. You know, I put it out there that I am, you know, part of the left-hand path.
All my coworkers know. My car is kind of telling. I have, you know, inverted pentagrams, Cthulhu on my car. My boss wanted to know
nice.
What it meant. So he's walking around my car. He's like, tell me what all this shit means. And so I showed him. I told him what, you know, I told him all about Cthulhu and the mythos. I told him what the inverted pentagram meant. You know, I have zombies on my car. I have all kinds of crazy shit on my car. It's very, very telling. And he asked me, he's like, so are you pagan? I was like, yeah, actually I am, but I'm also a Satanist. And he looked at me because he's Orthodox, you know, Catholic. He's like, wow, really? The devil, huh? I was like, yeah, I'm down with the devil. That's but Jesus is my homeboy. And we joke about it. I think it's all in presentation, really. I think if you act like you should be hiding something, then people are going to be looking at you like, what the hell are you hiding?
Exactly. Exactly. And if you put it out there, I mean, see, how much goes down to the... You know, that's one of the questions that I ask the audience to examine for themselves. You know, if you're totally laid back about it, I've found that it's much more palatable, much more acceptable by the masses. You know, when you
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you're very nonchalant about it. I mean, why would your beliefs be any more ridiculous than their beliefs? I'm like, okay, you have zombie Jesus. All right, cool. That's cool. I like zombies. You know, they're all Catholics, right, you know, at my job. So, you know, they know where I'm at, you know. And sometimes religion and politics comes up in the office, you know, where, you know, everybody has to kind of take a stance on certain things, political issues. You know, religion and politics in the office is, you know, the two biggest no-no topics for that reason,
mm-hmm.
because people freak out. And so when my coworker's diatribing about, you know, something going on in the news, and I'll offer my perspective, and she finds herself agreeing with me an awful lot, and I was like, see, we're not as different as you think we are.
See, and there's another thing that actually just came to mind as you were talking. Left-hand path and taboos, right-hand path and taboos. That's really what it boils down to, is that we smash taboos. Left-hand path, we examine these things. We question it. We go where other people fear to tread. And that no matter what relationship you're in, that's going to affect it.
Absolutely. And I think, like
well,
I said,
anyway,
I think it all boils down to approach.
Absolutely. Well, hey, just letting you know, we have 60 seconds left, or now 50 seconds left of the show. I wanted to thank you for coming on, being my guest. I don't know if other people could hear the show or if there was some sort of connection issue. But
yeah, it was really like in and out, in and out, and we'd get dead space for like 5-10 minutes. But, yeah, good show. I really liked it.
And thank you for contributing.
Absolutely.
All right. I am going to play the outro, and we are out. See you guys later.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Benzer or Beast or any institution associated with us. The Ooze does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.